The moment he passed through the hospital's revolving door, his mind turned to Daphne. On previous visits, he'd consciously conjured the memories as a way of combating fear. Now it was like being one of Pavlov's experimental dogs, and he pictured her as soon as he smelled the iodine disinfectant and warm rubber, well before he got to the odours of suffering humanity in the lift, and started to sweat. Flitting animal movements, narrowed, knowing eyes, dark, tangled hair, dirty bare feet. A boyish girl who ran and tumbled, an adventuring escape artist, a creature on the cusp. The images soothed him. They made him feel alive. The risky element was part of the pleasure. This was only his fourth session, but he was confident he could manage it by himself. He had strongly encouraged Nina to visit her ancient mother in Greece, playing down the number of treatments. She didn't even know that he'd stopped the hormone medication in favour of the poisonous chemicals. Better alone, less fuss. More chance of it all disappearing from view. He knew how to bring familiarity and, with luck, intimacy to a new location. It was satisfying to establish a routine. Even if he was only staying one day in a hotel, he unpacked all his clothes, laid his old silk dressing gown on the bed, and learned the name of the receptionist. He carried an aged leather holdall containing a down pillow, a cashmere wrap, earphones for music, a bottle of tonic water, and a packet of salted crackers. There was also a battered copy of Selected Poems of Thomas Hardy. He probably wouldn't read them, but he would place the book on the bedside table as a declaration. I am a civilized man. It was a message as much for himself as anyone else. He spotted Annette at the nurse's station across the large open-plan space of the chemotherapy department. The cancer unit was all swathes of clear glass, making light and transparency the response to the hidden knots growing in the darkness of bowel or brain. It was not yet 9, but there were already people settling into colourful reclining chairs or lying in beds, hooked up to drips, murmuring quietly to companions and carers. Sunshine streamed in from high windows, creating bright shapes on the floor. Annette was his favourite nurse, and he was making sure that he became her favourite patient. Drawing up to the desk, he smiled and fished out a beribboned packet of chocolate almonds from his bag, presenting it with mock gallantry. "To the best nurse in London." He gave a small bow as if about to take her hand and ask for the next dance. Annette giggled indulgently. He hoped it was unusual to find someone who remained so suave when about to go into battle with a pipeline of docetaxel. "Thank you, Ralph, and you're not a bad patient." She patted his arm with a plump, dark hand, and there was a waft of biscuits and Nescafe, mingled with sweet oil from her tightly braided hair. He liked the hints of the Caribbean that came through in her speech, even though she had already explained she was born in London. "You're looking good today, Ralph. You know, you seem so young. Are you really coming up to 70? "Papers, lists, dates, certificates, doctor's reports. Nowhere to hide once you're in a system."
"Not quite. Still over a year before I throw that party."
There were already celebratory concerts planned for his 70th, including a grand event at the Barbican. None of the organisers had heard about his failing health. He knew he looked good, though for how much longer was a question as hard to ignore as the anticipatory nausea now seeping through his stomach. All the same, he still boasted a full head of hair, even if it was not the rich brown of his youth. And his trouser size had not increased since he was a student. No running to fat for him. The crumpled linen jacket gave the impression of an Englishman abroad, while the faded jeans and sneakers hinted at an attachment not only to youth, but to the garb of his own youth. "Prodded, jabbed, tubed. Okay, Ralph, just relax now. I'll come and check on you in 30 minutes. Here we go.